No, Andy, we weren't that close in college because, frankly, he just didn't like me. It's not a word of truth in that. I don't really, you know how that happens sometimes. And we've gotten to be close friends, very close friends over the years. And I admire Andy and appreciate him for his uncompromising commitment to the truth and the good way that he delivers the lessons that he presents. And I was so thrilled to find out that they decided to keep him as a director. I hope I'm right about that. If I'm not, I'm in a lot of trouble, but that's the word that came over to Mount Vernon. And did I say that the way you wanted me to, Andy? Okay, all right. Anyway, but I was so glad to hear that, and wish the school here the best, and love the school, and just hope that you'll have many more good years, and get a lot more students. That would tickle me to death, and I'm sure that'd be a thrill for those that are working with these, some of them young people. Some of them are like John Keith, are a little bit older, but there's some young ones here as well. But I really appreciate the school. I guess it was back in the winter that I received a letter and I think a call also from Andy asking me if I would talk on the topic from 1 Corinthians chapter 7 on the topic when a spouse dies. Well, I was more than glad to do that. I think Andy was probably a little concerned that it might be difficult for me to do that since I did lose my wife about 19 years ago, October the 18th, 1993. And, of course, I've got a lot of memories of the things that went on around that. And actually, some of them are actually really good memories. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Maybe some of my ramblings about what I went through might be helpful to some of you all that may have to face that. Some of you will relate to me that have faced that. But let's get to our text, and that'd be 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Verses 39 and 40, it says this: a wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth, but if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to marry, to be married rather to whom she will, only in the Lord. But rather she is happier if she so abide. After my judgment, and I think also that I have the Spirit of God. Let me, for just a moment, flip over to, I believe, a good parallel passage to that passage. And, of course, that's found in Romans chapter 7, verses 2 and 3. Paul says here, For the woman, rather, which hath a husband, is bound by the law to her husband, so long as he liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband liveth, she be married to another, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. I want to talk about several things that I think are implications in this passage, and then kind of in a sense get to the core of what we're going to talk about. But I want to highlight some points that I listed in the transcript that I presented that was put in the book that have to do with what the text says here. And some of these things, maybe a few years ago, especially the first point, you wouldn't have thought you'd have to spend very much time on it. And that is that I believe this text shows by implication that marriage is between a man and a woman. Now, I'm 49 years old. I started to say, by the looks of you, some of you are quite a bit older than that. Some of you are younger. But the times in which I grew up, that needed no explanation. There was no such thing that at least in my experience, there was no such thing as marriage that didn't involve a man and a woman. I was so naive, I guess you would say, when I came up into the Parkersburg area and went to then Ohio Valley College, that I didn't even know that there was really such a thing as homosexuality. I knew that it was probably just as real as what you might see in a sideshow when the circus came to, or the carnival came to town. And I remember the first time that I saw one man leaned up against another one in an embrace, I could not, it sickened me. I could not believe it. And I can't remember, Dan, if you were with me, we were going over to one of the parks, I was with some of the students, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. My, how times have changed. According to a Gallup survey, 51% of Americans agreed with the president, our president, who said that he endorsed gay marriage. I was sorry to hear that. I don't even know how to express how terrible that seems to me and how sad that seems for my children and for my hopefully coming grandchildren. What kind of a world will they live in? Marriage is between a man and a woman. Marriage is what God intended from the very beginning. We can see in a number of passages, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4 comes to mind. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. But whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge. I bought a Ford. Don't fault me for that if you're a Chevy person, but I bought a Ford here a while back, and they gave me Sirius Radio on there for a while, free. That's how they get you. They give you the free radio, and then after about 6 months, you're kind of hooked on it a little bit, and they say, you've got to pay a certain amount. Well, I told them, I said, I'm not ready to pay that. And they said, would you do it for $20? I said, yes. 6 months later, would you pay us $48? And then they get you fully hooked on it and they give you the full price. That's where I am right now with Sirius Radio. And I don't like those luxuries, if you want to call them that, but I do enjoy when I'm on the road to be able to hear news reports and music and things of that nature. But there was a channel on there, and I was flicking through one night, and incidentally, be careful. If you get Sirius Radio, it's not all good. There's some very bad channels on there. I've had to block a few out. But I was listening one night, and there was a lady by the name of Jennifer Berman, I think is her name, and she's supposed to be a marriage therapist and a relationship therapist, because see, a lot of people aren't married anymore. I remember it sounded like a young lady by the sound of her voice called in, and she said, for economical reasons, my boyfriend and I have moved in together, and of course, Dr. Jen said, oh, that's good, good, good. And she said, we've moved in together, and we've got one problem. She said, my parents are religious, and they're very opposed to my living with this fella. And I thought, okay, it's going to be interesting to hear this good advice that we're going to get from this doctor. And she said this. She said, you have to understand that your parents came from a different time, and they have different ideas, and the world has changed around them, and yet you need to respect their religious beliefs, but you still need to stand your ground and do what you think is right and stay with that man. And she said, you have to understand that your parents aren't very sophisticated. And I thought about that. I thought, okay, not very sophisticated. And I'm thinking, okay, what is the definition of sophisticated? I'm not very sophisticated because I'm not sure if I know what sophisticated means. And so I got out my Webster dictionary and I looked up sophisticated. And here's what Webster had to say. Wise, to be sophisticated, is to be wise in the ways of the world, fit for the worldly wise. And I thought, well, that's really not true. I live in the world. I don't want to participate in a lot of things that the world has to offer in terms of sinful activity. But I guess in some sense, I must say as a gospel preacher, I'm very well aware of the ways of the world. So I guess I'm sophisticated. I don't know anything else about this girl's parents. But I resented the comment because of the implication of the comment. And that is to say that if you think that marriage is as it's prescribed in the Bible, whether it be a man and a woman as opposed to gay marriage, or whether you think that there ought to be marriage, period, as opposed to living together, you're not very sophisticated. I also hear terminology about this when it comes to believing things such as the creation account, the accurate account in Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And so I don't believe that. And I don't know this girl's parents, but if they stood their ground, at least on that topic, whether they were members of the church or not, I would say they were sophisticated. They realized this is not good. And yet this is the direction of our culture. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 4, and he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he that made them from the beginning made them male and female? It's answered right there. And said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall become one flesh. And one of the speakers earlier made reference to Romans 1. In verse 26, for this cause God gave them over unto vile affections. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. So much for a person being born that way. The Bible says that's not the case. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, bearing their lust one toward another, men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves the recompense of their error, which was meat. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which the King James says are not convenient. One thing that I find in this passage, and it may be stretching it a little bit, but it's there. Marriage itself is between a man and a woman. Secondly, in our passage here, I believe it's understood, and this context seems to indicate that when a couple is married, they are bound by the law. What law? I believe he's meaning the law of God. Because sometimes there's a great contradiction between the laws of man and the laws of God. Sometimes a couple can get together, say their vows, be married in the eyes of God and men, and then turn around a few months later and say, it's just not working out, we're going to get an annulment. Somebody says, well, they didn't get a divorce, they got an annulment. Evidently, it's as if nothing ever happened. Not so. We're going by the laws, or the law, rather, of God. And the text helps us to understand that there's something that holds together that couple. And Bob Kessinger used to say in his marriage ceremony, and a greater law than this, I know Dan remembers that phrase, I pronounce you husband and wife by the laws of the state of whatever, but a greater law than this, the law of God. It might also be mentioned here that earlier in 1 Corinthians 7, one is not under bondage, and there have been a lot of misuses of that passage, and the word here is a different word. From the Greek word dio, if I pronounce it correctly. And it is to bind, to be in bonds, or to knit, or to tie, or to wind. It could even make a reference to something as simple as putting a rope together, binding a rope together. And he says, when you're married, you're bound together. You're knit together. That's one of the words that's used here, by vines. When you're married, you're knit together. Matthew chapter 5, verse 31 and 32. Jesus said, It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, save for the cause of fornication, causeth her, he says in this passage, a little different than Matthew 19:9, causes her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. This text helps us to understand that when a couple comes together in marriage, they are bound together. Christ only gives one exception. That leads to the third point, that marriage is for life. A wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. I guess she could kill him. That'd be one way to get rid of him, but I wouldn't recommend you do that. The Bible says she's bound to her husband as long as he liveth. According to the scriptures, then, there's only one cause or exception to this statement, and that is what Jesus said in Matthew 19:9 and Matthew 5, except it be for fornication. Two things sever the marriage relationship. And one of them is unfaithfulness of the spouse. The other that I'm really to talk about is the death of the spouse. I'm going to avoid talking about the second or the first of the two. I could speak with some experience on both of those. For I've lost a wife through death, and I've also lost a wife through unfaithfulness. And so I can speak in both, but I want to talk about the one assigned to me today. He goes on to say, but if her husband is dead, she's at liberty to marry whom she will. Which leads to this fourth stipulation that we find here. The passage indicates she can marry whomever she wants, only in the Lord. And so when he says she can marry whomever she will, that there are exceptions to that rule. It has to be a male in this context. It cannot be a female. It cannot be an animal. And before you want to laugh, there are people who want to marry their animals. I don't understand that. But there are people that are that crazy, I guess. But the real thing that we mention here, when he says she shall marry whom she will, only one who is eligible that she have the right to marry. That is to say, in this context, it mentions a woman specifically, that her husband could pass away and she would have the right to marry whom she will only in the Lord. And before we mention the specific comment I want to make about that, we need to understand that she can marry anybody if that person is eligible to marry. It could be that the person she's trying to marry is not eligible for remarriage. And that happens. Actually, it happens quite frequently the way things are in our culture today, in our society today. But the passage also mentions an expression that we also find in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 39, in accordance with the Word of God, or only in the Lord. Now, I threw my expression in there, because there are many today who believe that when it says she can marry whom she will, but only a Christian, are we prepared to go there? What I mean by that, does this passage teach then that a woman who is widowed and is a Christian can only marry a man who is also a Christian? Is that a demand? Because if we believe this is a demand, only in the Lord means only a Christian, we've got a problem, and the problem is that sometimes a widow will go out and marry somebody, and they've married someone who's not a Christian, and then we say, you know what? You have to marry only a Christian. That means that marriage is unscriptural. What's her alternative? Would she have to then decide to leave that man? Are we advocating then that she would have to separate from that man? I've not heard those who would advocate that idea, although perhaps some would. I believe the expression only in the Lord is used in the same sense that it's used in Ephesians, where Paul tells the children of the church at Ephesus, he says, obey your parents in the Lord. I know it doesn't say only in the Lord, but he says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And so we might step back from that and say, well, it means only in the Lord, or in the Lord means in the church. And so that means if children have parents who are not Christians, they don't have to listen to them anymore. I think that's a bad conclusion. Why do we take a position like that? Well, we see the passage, and I can understand why there are those who would conclude that this means only a Christian, but I think there's a legitimate reason why we take that position, and that is this, that I believe it would be very unwise and foolish. No one would argue with that. It would be very unwise and foolish for a widow or a widower to marry again and marry somebody who's not in the church. I can't give you any good reason to do that. I would advise anybody that loses a spouse to marry a Christian, to not take that chance. And yet I do not think by scriptural standards, I can enforce that upon you. Well, there are a lot of things, I'm sure there are perhaps other things in the passage that we could talk about, but these are kind of some guidelines. And the Bible is pro-marriage. You go out, as I said earlier, today you go out and maybe you're in the line at Walmart or a grocery store and you see a woman and a man and 2-3 children. Sometimes, if not more often than not, there are no wedding bands. And they are more than likely living together. And you would be surprised how many times I begin to talk to even young people. It's actually discouraging in the realm of evangelism to begin to talk to that young couple, relatively young, 2 or 3 children, and you find out that maybe she or the man or the woman, maybe both of them have been divorced 1, 2, 3 times, and they're fairly young. And they've said, well, we're just going to live together. And that's discouraging, and yet that's a commentary on our society, our culture. But let me spend just a few minutes talking about some observations that I have about losing a spouse. Ephesians chapter 5, starting at verse 22, says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be unto their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church, and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it by the washing of water by the word, that he might present to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord, the church. For we are members of his body and of his flesh and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they too shall become one flesh. And I often think about what is said back in Genesis chapter 2. God made this observation. It's not good that the man should be alone. And I know that's true. But let me talk a few minutes and tell you about my wife Cynthia. Many of you might remember her back in 1984, we were married at the Camden Avenue Church of Christ. Charles Pugh did the ceremony. Dan, I dug that old video out here a while back, not too long ago, and looked at the video. Your dad was on there, and of course you had hair back then, by the way, Dan. That was a surprise to me. I was surprised how we've all changed, to tell you the truth. That little skinny boy that got married, he's not around anymore, I can tell you that. But I saw Charles on there. Charles had quite a bit more hair, too. You can tell him I said that. But it was neat to see all the friends and members of the church that were there that day. And I can remember so vividly how excited I was that day. Dan, in his usual fashion, came in, and everybody was supposed to have black suits on and everything. Dan came in a big red checkerboard 1970 wide lapel suit coat. And Cynthia said, "He's not going to wear that, is he?" I said, "I hope not." But everybody had their laughs. That's on there too, by the way. And we all had a great time, and he finally put the proper suit on, and he was my best man. I just remember the emotion that I had that day, because I had my whole life ahead of me. I thought, I've got this wonderful wife, we're going to have children, and we're going to grow old together. I could remember Cynthia talking about that. She told me one day, Frank, she said, she liked R.C. Oliver, and she said, "Rick, I hope you look as good as him when you get old as him." I said, "Well, I probably won't," but we talked about getting old together, and all the dreams and the excitement of through the years. And she was 27 when she had a car accident. And of course, everybody, that most of you probably know, that it was a head-on collision and she was killed. And we'd been married about 10 years. And at that time, we had two children, Rachel and Kyle. And I remember the Monday morning that she was killed. She told me she was going to run down to the bank, and I said, "Well, Kyle wants to go with you." And this is the hardest thing for me to say, but she said, "Let him stay with you." And I said, "Hey, he's wanting to go with you." He was throwing a fit wanting to go with him. She said, "No, let him stay." And I said, that was one gift she gave me, because he would have probably been killed. And she left Kyle there with me, and I never saw her again. And I can remember when I went up to the scene, somebody said they heard something on the scanner, and I said, "I heard..." They told me it involved Cynthia, and I got in the car and went up the road on Route 30 there before we get to Lisbon, and traffic everywhere, and they wouldn't let me through, and I just went, and the policeman finally said, "Sir, you don't need to go up there," and I did, and I went up and I saw the car, and I remember thinking, she couldn't have lived through that, and the car was just torn all to pieces, and a million things were going through my mind. It always does. Even if it's not a traumatic thing, if you lose your spouse, all of a sudden you're thinking of all these different scenarios and situations, and you know, how are we going to make it, and what about my kids, and you think about so many different things. And they said, "Well, they've taken her up to the hospital." And so I remember going to the hospital, and when I arrived at the hospital, they immediately ushered me into a little room. I had been in that room a number of other times. It's the room that they take the family in when they're going to say your loved one has passed away. And I remember getting in that room, and a priest was standing there. And it sounds funny now. At the time, it was probably terrible, but they said, "This priest wants to talk to you." And I said, "The last thing I want to do is talk to a priest. Get away from me." Well, you can laugh if you want. It wasn't funny at the time, but I thought, that's the last thing I want to do is talk to a priest. Because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was, you know, it was so tough and so devastating in so many different ways. I'm glad Dan's here for a lot of reasons, but one of the things that I remember is how good the church was to me. And I remember that Dan came up, and I think he stayed for days, and I couldn't even sleep in my own room. My house was filled with people for a week, and I was glad it was that way. I couldn't stand the thought of being by myself. And Dan, I would lay on the couch, and Dan would sleep beside of me. I shouldn't have done this part of it, Andy. But I really appreciate him for that. But it is an emotional thing. And it is hard. But I remember how good the church was to me in so many different ways. People came and they brought food and they offered comfort, and it meant more to me than anything. Always remember that when somebody loses a spouse, we kind of leave them to themselves. That's not a good thing. Make sure you rush in there and take them food. You don't have to say a lot either. You can just wish them the best, tell them if you'll be there for them, and because people sometimes don't know what to say either. And I just remember how people were kind in so many ways. Another thing I remember very well is people said, well, Rick's a preacher. He probably doesn't have a lot of money, and so a lot of churches brought money to me to such an extent that I almost was embarrassed. I don't think I've ever told this to publicly, at least, but people brought me money, and within about 2 weeks, I had $48,000 piled around everywhere that people kept bringing. And I kept telling elderships would come in, they'd have $2,000 or $3,000, and they'd say, here's some money for you. And I said, you don't really need to do that. Oh, we want to. They wouldn't take a refusal on it. And I gave a lot of that away. I didn't know what to do. I'd never had any money. I didn't know what to do with it. And I gave, knew people that needed it, and gave some away and used some, and tried to do what was right. I'll tell you a little funny story. You're not in, and anybody here that's lost a spouse knows what I'm talking about. I wasn't thinking clearly for the first few weeks. You think, I went in one day and thought Cynthia was in the house and yelled for her, and she wasn't there. Habit, I guess. But those are the kind of things that happen. If you've been through it, you know what I'm talking about. But I can remember one day I was down, we had a chimney for a barrel heater that we had in the basement, wood burning heater. And I had opened up that flue, the door, and I had stuck thousands of dollars in there. I didn't know what to do with it. And I had forgotten about that, and about a year later, I was down in there and pulled that door open, there was money everywhere. I said, actually, that might have been a good thing, but I didn't even realize it. But people were so kind in so many ways. That's how good and considerate members of the church were. But I also remember how inconsiderate people were. I remember standing on my porch. The hearse is pulling into the driveway of the Church of Christ at Hanoverton, which is where I preached at that time. And I remember every detail of it. It was an old 1960s hearse that they used for the local funeral home. And they're bringing the my wife and over to the building for the service. And as that hearse was pulling in, somebody pulled in the driveway and said, we got Rick's mail. And I saw my mail and I saw something here, and I thought, well, I better open that. And I can remember standing with the open letter as the hearse is pulling in, and the open letter says, we're suing you for the price of the truck that was destroyed. They didn't wait for me to even bury my wife. You'll find that happens with the world. The world doesn't care. I got a call before Cynthia was buried from a car dealership saying, we saw in the paper where you lost your car. We'll make you a good deal on another one. There'll be people that'll do those kind of things. But you know, it was the church that meant the most to me. It's really been like that all my life. And if you've had any trouble or any difficulty, you'll appreciate the church. And I do appreciate the good that people have done for me. But if I'm in any way qualified to offer any advice, it would go back to something I said earlier, and that is, if you do lose your spouse, find a, in the book, I don't remember exactly how I had it written in the transcript or whatever, the manuscript rather, but the word faithful is marked in the book, and I'm glad. Find a faithful spouse. Find a faithful person to marry. Sometimes people wear the name Christian and they're really not what they ought to be, but find a faithful Christian if you lose your spouse, if you must remarry. Doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do that. And yet, if you do marry a Christian, anyone that loses his or her spouse, anyone that goes through that terrible loss and that emptiness, can understand what I'm talking about. If you've been through it, you know. If you haven't been through it, I'm thankful that you don't know. But I can remember people saying to me, I know what you're going through. And I'm thinking, you've never lost your spouse. You really don't know. They meant well, but they were wrong. about what they said. They didn't understand. My heart goes out to you if you've lost a wife or a husband, because I can relate to that. And it's a terrible loss. My prayer goes with you if you have. And lean on the church if you find yourself in a predicament like this, and the church will be a great blessing to you. I appreciate your time.